welcome to Tuned to Yesterday, bringing you programs from radio's golden age. I'm your host, Mark Levonier. Comedy coming up in this hour. Later on, we hear future Tonight Show host Jack Parr. But right now, it's time to smile with Eddie Cantor. That's the name of the program. From December 25th, 1940, we hear the drugstore follies of 1940 on NBC.
Ladies and gentlemen, the makers of Ipana for the smile of beauty and Sal Hepatica for the smile of health present The Drugstore Follies, starring Eddie Cantor, featuring Bobby Sherwood's orchestra, the witch from The Wizard of Oz, Margaret Hamilton, Edgar Fairchild's Glee Club, Benny Rubin, Mr. Guffey, Eddie Cantor's latest singing discovery, 13-year-old Olive Major, and your favorite, Harry Von Zell. It's The Drugstore Follies of 1940.
To the 60,000 druggists on the corners of the nation, we present this little token of sincere appreciation.
To the men who medicate, we proudly dedicate the drugstore follies.
Up with the curtain, down with the blues. Here is a sighting cure for bad news.
This is the follies, the drugstore follies, produced by the guy
with the eyes like Svengali's.
Every listener has a seat on the aisle.
It's the drugstore follies, and it's time to smile.
And here he is, your master of ceremonies, Eddie Cantor.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and a Merry Christmas to you. Our program tonight is a departure from custom, a holiday from plot. In a radio extravaganza called The Drugstore Follies, we will endeavor to present the highlights of the year now approaching its end. Our review opens with a reenactment of The Outstanding Marriage of 1940.
Do you take this woman to be your lawful wedded wife?
I do.
Do you take this man to be your lawful wedded husband?
Uh-huh.
I now pronounce you man and wife.
Come on, darling. Pick up your ball and jacks. You're Mrs. Jessel now.
The Drugstore Follies now presents the outstanding surprise of 1940. In the banquet hall of New York City's Waldorf Astoria Hotel, 30 men are seated at a table. They have just finished an 8-course dinner. One man stands up.
All right, waiter, I'll take the check.
You, Mr. Benny?
And that was the outstanding surprise of 1940. And now, the outstanding radio achievement of 1940.
This year in radio, the number of quiz programs reached a new high. Most successful was the one patterned after the movie Bank Night formula, in which the money just keeps piling up when the contestants can't answer the questions. Let's peek in on the quizmaster, Professor Fuzz.
Good evening, quiz fans. Do you want to win our grand prize of $84? Oh, you do? Well, just try and get it. We dare you. Our first contestant tonight is Mr. Philip Jackson. All you have to do to win the money, sir, is to answer correctly this one question. Tell me, who was the chief of police of Deligsburg, Texas, in the year 1801?
Samuel Potts, born August 1st, 1753, at 3:37 a.m., daylight saving time.
Oh, I see.
That's it.
Well, there's another part to this question.
Oh.
What size shoes did he wear?
8.5 C, patent leather with brown laces.
Mm-hmm. How many freckles did he have on his face?
78,453.
How many on the index finger of his left hand?
Mm-hmm.
Well, better luck next time. You ought to brush up on your history, Jackson. Now we have another contestant here who has just as much a chance to win the $84 as Mr. Jackson. His name is Charles Billingsley. Now, Mr. Billingsley, the program is coming to a close, so I only have time to ask you one question. If you answer it correctly, you win the $84 jackpot. Here is your question. What was the name of the African explorer who, in the year 1640, sailed his ship?
Captain Peter Bennett.
I see by the clock that we can just barely squeeze in one more question. How many mosquitoes are there at this very minute in the Belgian Congo?
4,754. Oh, I mean 55.
Oh, I almost had you there. However, I won't hold it against you. I'll give you a substitute question.
Thanks.
Tell me, who was the foreman of the bricklayers who built King Tut's tomb 6,000 years ago?
The day shift or the night shift?
Ah.
Why, the night shift.
He was an Arab. Abdul Del Prim. Cairo local number 604. Now, do I win the $84?
Yes, but first there's something I'd like to ask you. Yeah. Isn't it true that Adam was the first man?
Why, of course. All men are descended from Adam.
That's right. Even you are descended from Adam. Even the sponsor of this program is descended from Adam.
Quite true.
Aha. Then, if you are descended from Adam, and the sponsor is descended from Adam, you and the sponsor must be related, and no relatives of the sponsor are allowed to participate. Good night, you crook.
The Drugstore Follies is proud to salute the leading comic strip of the year, Superman. We find Superman on a street corner watching an excavation. Suddenly there's excitement. A spark has ignited the fuse on a stick of dynamite. Workmen run for their lives, but they're too slow. The fuse is burning shorter. Suddenly Superman swoops down, pulls two workmen aside, picks the dynamite up with his teeth, and then...
Darn it, there goes my inlay.
That was Superman at work. Now we show you Superman at home.
Oh, wifey, what a day I've had. Saving lives, flying through the skies.
All right, Superman, I know. Here, open this can of sardines and we'll have supper.
All right, give me that can opener. Oh, look, I cut my finger again. It's bleeding. I can't look. Oh!
You're not Superman, you're Schlepperman.
Oh, I can't stand it. I'm always coming right here.
So much for Superman. The Drugstore Follies now presents a condensed version of the outstanding book of the year, Ernest Hemingway's For Whom the Bell Tolls.
Get your good humors here.
Ladies and gentlemen, we present the most married individual of 1940, Mrs. Veronica Flounder, and here she is. Mrs. Flounder, I understand that you've been married 9 times. 9 times? Gosh, you've been married a lot.
Oh, what do I care? I have a charge account at the City Hall.
Tell me, Mrs. Flounder, have you any children?
Oh, yes. My daughter is a debutante. She's coming out next month. She looks just like me.
Yeah. With a puhush like that, you ought to keep her in. I just know that Harry Von Zell would love to meet you.
Did somebody call me, Eddie?
Yes, Harry. This is Mrs. Flounder.
Oh, well, I'm very pleased.
Oof, oof.
Eddie.
Is Tigalot just like a knight of old? Come here, Mr. Von Zell. You may kiss my hand.
Wait a minute. Is that your hand, or are you wearing a catcher's mitt?
Ah, listen to that gay, carefree laugh. Yes. You're such a jovial fellow, Mr. Bonzelli. I wish you could come to my house tonight and play Santa Claus for the baby.
Oh.
I'm the baby. Woo-hoo!
Well, I really would like to play Santa Claus, but I haven't got a beard. Say, could I borrow one of your eyebrows?
Don't let him insult your eyebrows, Mrs. Flounder. It's very becoming. And your hairdo. Wherever did you get that lovely hairdo?
Do you like it?
Hmm?
I copied it from a Russian wolfhound. Friend of mine.
Yep. Look, Mrs. Flounder, I brought you here to talk about your matrimonial adventures.
But I want to talk to Von Zelli about...
Please.
But I'll only take a minute.
Now, you heard what Mr. Cantor said.
Please, what? Harry. I admire your work so much, and I know I could do so much for you because...
Listen, now, won't you
I
please?
Have $1 million.
Please, sit down. Here, take my chair.
What chair? The woman's got $1 million here. Sit down on my lap. Go ahead, sit down. You really have $1 million, Mrs. Flounder?
Yes, and I want to invest it in a motion picture with Harry Von Zell as the star.
Never mind, Von Zell. Where is the $1 million?
It's buried with my other money on my estate.
Tell me, where is your estate?
Well, it starts in Glendale and winds up in Pomona.
Oh, quite an estate, isn't it?
Now then, are you satisfied, Harry?
Well,
will you make the picture and let me be your leading lady?
Leading lady? Do you really think you look that good?
Yes, I now think I look like a leading lady. I didn't think so before.
Before what?
Before I had my nose fixed.
You had that thing fixed?
Oh, yes. It was much longer.
How long?
Well, it started in Glendale and wound up in... Not to mention a short detour south of Azusa. It was a pahip.
It's still a pahip. A long nose like that must have been quite a hindrance.
No, it helped me in some things.
Yeah?
For instance, with my nose, I could tell on Tuesday how your program was going to be on Wednesday.
Look, Miss Flounder, I'm still a better actor than your Harry Bonzel. Did you see me in 40 Little Mothers?
40 Little Mothers? No. Where did that play?
Well, it started in Glendale and it wound up in...
Pomona?
No, Glendale.
Sorry, I can't use you. Harry.
Yes?
You simply have to tell me if you are going to appear in my picture.
Well, Miss Flounder, before I accept your offer, naturally I'd like to know something about the story of your movie.
Oh, it's beautiful.
Yes?
Especially our big scene.
Uh-huh.
It's in the drawing room, and you're chasing me around the couch. You chase me and chase me, and finally, you catch me.
What'll you bet?
Oh, Bonzelli, just consent, and I'll get Lubitsch to direct it.
You couldn't get Lubitsch to direct that turkey if you gave him $500,000.
I'll give him $750,000.
He still won't take it.
I'll give him $1,000,000.
He won't. Hello?
This is Lubitsch. Keep your big mouth shut.
I've had enough of this, Mrs. Flounder. It's awful. You don't know anything about pictures. And what's more, madam, I don't believe you've got $1,000,000.
Oh, I've got much more than that. But $100,000 is all I'm carrying in my pocketbook.
Mm-hmm.
That's because I'm afraid of being held up when I'm walking home along Hollywood Boulevard.
A woman like you with all that money shouldn't go on a crowded street with all those lights. You ought to be more exclusive. Why don't you go through a dark alley somewhere, huh? There's a nice one near my house, and it would be very convenient for you and me.
Now, Eddie, look, I'm taking her home tonight. And don't worry, if a burglar tries to hold her up, I'll slug you.
Thank you, Bobby Sherwood. And now... the greatest after-dinner speech of 1940.
Gee, fellas, you shouldn't have done this. To think that you boys cooked this dinner yourselves, all for little me. Bobby Sherwood, I never knew you could make a cheese souffle.
My Aunt Gussie showed me how.
And those mashed potatoes were so fluffy-guffy. And Eddie, when I think of you slaving over a hot stove... cooking that delicious creamed broccoli, all for me, I just...
Oh, don't mention Harry. Gosh, we're pals, aren't we?
Yeah. Well, all I can think of, fellas, to say is... I'm going to see that every one of you gets an extra tube of Ipana toothpaste. On December 20th, 1890, two brothers parted and settled in widely separated corners of the world. Last week, they were reunited. We now bring you the touching, dramatic scene as these two brothers see each other for the first time in 50 years.
Hello, Joe.
Hello, Mo. I thought that would get a bigger laugh, didn't you, Joe?
Yes, Mo.
Goodbye, Joe.
Goodbye, Mo.
Now, the Drugstore Follies presents number one pest of 1940. As you know, some people are not only low, mean, petty, vicious, vile, degraded...
Keep on going, Kennedy. You'll finally get down to me.
Mr. Guffey!
Howdy, yes. Fine thing. Go on, say it, Cantor. Tell the people I'm not good enough to be in your drugstore follies. I should walk back to New York, huh?
No, why should you walk? There are bicycles, motorcycles, airplanes, buses.
Wouldn't mention trains, huh?
Why should I mention trains?
Oh, you're against the railroad.
Who?
Sure, stop the train.
Why?
Shouldn't be any railroad. My poor brother, after 4 years, he finally got a job, a brakeman on the railroad. Now, Cantor wants to throw him out of work.
I don't want to... I hope your brother works 365 days in a year.
Shouldn't even have one day off, yeah. Huh?
All right, let him take off New Year.
New Year, the one day he gets overtime, Cantor lays him off.
I'm through. Wait a minute, Guffey. Honestly, I'm sorry I was ever born.
Oh, now he wants to throw the stork out of work.
Get out.
$4 a week he pays me for this. $4, and I do his laundry yet besides.
Yeah, but not the big pieces.
Get out. $4, get out, Guffey.
the outstanding picture of 1940, Northwest Mounted Police.
This is the story of a rip-snorting, gun-toting, trail-blazing, broad-shouldered, two-fisted He-Man, played by Eddie Cantor. As the scene opens, we find our hero wearing chaps, boots, boots, marching up and down again. Boots. Boots.
Wait a minute, Harry.
Don't stop me.
What are you doing?
This may be better than the sketch.
Continue with the announcement, please.
Of course.
Continue, will you please?
Where is it? Yeah. We take you now to the headquarters of the Northwest Mounted Police. Let's listen.
Well, stranger, you're going to have a tough job tracking down this half-breed killer Corbeau. He's mighty handy with a shooting iron.
Listen, I'm a ranger, and I'm a pretty good shot myself. Back in a Texas pool room, I lined up 12 men and shot them all with one bullet.
How could you do that?
I used carbon paper. Well, I guess I'll be scooting along.
Well, thank you.
Well, good luck.
Well.
Look, you come down a little and I'll come down a little.
Okay, Ranger, but before you go, I want to warn you. Corbeau's got a half-breed daughter named Louvette.
Louvette? Why, I met her once.
Well, be careful of Louvette, because if she kisses you, she's dynamite.
Dynamite? Oh, no. I already lost one in late today playing Superman. Well, goodbye, Joe.
Goodbye, Mo.
Now, where's my horse? Oh, there you are, Cookie.
All this I do for $4 a week.
Come on, Cookie. Giddy up. All right, and stop shagging, will you? Come on, if we're going to capture Corbeau, we got to find his beautiful daughter, Louvette. Louvette. Comes Louvette. She mustn't see us like this. Get down off my back, will you, your crazy horse, and let me ride you for a while. Ah. Louvette!
Hello, tall, dark, and handsome.
Gee, thanks.
I mean the horse.
Well, Louvette, we meet again here in the wilderness.
Yes, you find me alone, Ranger.
You find your own Lone Ranger. Busy. You don't remember me, eh, Louvette?
Yes, I remember you, Dusty River.
Well, my name used to be Dusty River, but I changed it because it lacked dignity.
Well, what you change it to?
Stagnant pool.
Oh, you funny man. You funny man, Dimple Puss. You got a nice smile.
Thanks.
You got a nice, shiny white teeth.
You like them?
This fine spot for commercial, you know.
Wait a minute. Never mind. Never mind. Don't encourage him. He'll do one. Don't. Look, Louvette, just tell me where your father is. Wait. What's that rustling in the brush?
It is Corbeau. Look out. He's going to shoot.
Oh. Oh, I'm riddled with bullets. He got me good.
Where did he get you?
Well, started in Glendale and wound up in Pomona.
When you're ill, your friend the druggist never fails you. He has something good for anything that ails you.
He fills prescriptions with great expedients. He knows exactly the right ingredients.
Here's a formula for your domestic life. If you recognize the symptoms of a happy man and wife. If he embraces an angel in laces when it's just a calico dress. If all of his kisses are saved for the missus, that's my prescription for happiness. Though guys like Apollo could beat them all hollow for looks and romantic finesse. If she is able to say he's my Gable, That's my prescription for happiness. When times are slack and things look black and trouble seems to mount, a gentle touch can mean so much. It's the little things that count. It's not easy pickings. We work like the dickens for each little glimpse of success. What do we fight for and slave day and night for? That certain someone's caress. That's my prescription for happiness.
Now, ladies and gentlemen, the Drugstore Follies presents the most popular couple of this year, last year, any year, Mr. and Mrs. Santa Claus at home. Santa has just returned from his long journey. Listen.
Oh, hello, Ma. I'll be with you in a minute. Whoa, Dunder. Whoa, Blitzen. Whoa, Dasher, Prancer, and Jones.
Jones? You have a new reindeer?
Well, just an elk I picked up in St. Louis. Oh, Ma, I'm exhausted. Traveling, traveling, in the air, on the land, traveling from state to state. I don't know how Eleanor does it.
Darling, you do look tired.
Yes, Ma. And this is the last time I'm going out in this red suit. Some fella named Dyes chased me all over the country.
Dear, dear, must have been a long chase.
Yeah. Started in Glendale and wound up in the moment.
Well, come on in and take those wet boots off.
Well, don't you think we better feed the reindeer first? They've done a swell job this year, and Ma, they deserve something better than straw.
Well, we've got caviar, filet mignon, Idaho potatoes, and peach melba.
Well, is that food for reindeer?
It ain't hay.
Oh, Ma, them jokes. If I didn't know you, I'd swear you was Phil Harris.
Come on now, sit down in this nice, easy chair and let me take your boots off.
Yeah.
Oh, that's the phone. Answer it while I pour out a hot drink.
Yeah. Hello. Yeah, well, I'm awful sorry. I just got in. Well, now stop your crying, honey. Now stop crying. I'll see what I can do about it. You want a doll that says Mama, a dolly sewing kit, a little ironing board. Well, you sweet thing, I'll see that you get them first thing in the morning. Now, don't cry anymore, will you? Goodbye.
Who was that?
Humphrey Bogart.
Poor child. Well, here's a hot drink for you.
Yeah, there's a phone again. Hello.
Hello, Santa Claus. This is Eddie Canta Claus.
You again. Look, Cantor, aren't you ever satisfied?
Yes, but...
Didn't I fix it so you could go home to Hollywood for Christmas?
Yes, but...
And besides all the presents, didn't I also let you keep radio's greatest announcer, Harry Von Zell?
Yes, but...
Well, then, what's the trouble?
No trouble. That's what I wanted to talk to you about, my pal, Harry Von Zell. Did you do something nice for him?
Oh, Von Zell, I sure did. He's been a very good boy. And by the way, since this is Christmas, will you tell Harry just to say to his friends, one of the famous products that brings you this show is Sparkling Sal Hepatica. Will you remember that whenever you need a laxative?
Ladies and gentlemen, at least once each year of his radio career, Eddie Cantor has opened the door of opportunity for someone with unrecognized talent. Through this door have passed a host of people destined to greatness. Tonight, a 13-year-old girl knocks. And again, the great door opens.
Her name is Olive Major. She has the face of an angel and a voice to match. I think you will agree when you have heard her sing Silent Night.
Silent night, holy Mother and child. Oh,
That was perfectly lovely, Olive Major. You've made an auspicious start on what promises to be a glorious career.
And, Eddie, may I say that the beginning of Olive's career is the perfect ending for the drugstore follies.
You're right, Harry.
Down goes the curtain of the drugstore follies.
We hope you had a wonderful time.
The 60,000 druggists from coast to coast, join us in proposing this holiday toast. May the new year bring you great success with oodles and noodles of happiness.
Down goes the curtain on the drugstore follies.
From Alaska to the Isthmus, we are shouting Merry Christmas, and we hope you had a perfectly wonderful time.
Before we go, the makers of iPana and Sal Hepatica want to add their best wishes to those of Eddie Cantor and his cast and say Merry Christmas. May it be the best you've ever had. Stay tuned to the station for another thrilling installment of Mr. District Attorney, which follows immediately. Good night.
It's Time to Smile with Eddie Cantor on Tuned to Yesterday from Christmas Day 1940 on NBC, featuring one of the busiest announcers from radio's yesteryear, and that was Harry Von Zell. In addition to being a longtime announcer for Eddie Cantor, in the year of the broadcast we just heard, he was the head announcer for The Fred Allen Show and the famed Aldrich Family. It's an hour of comedy on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Levanier. And now, among other things, a parody of BBC shows on the Jack Parr program next. This was first broadcast on NBC on August 31st, 1947.
From Hollywood, Lucky Strike presents the Jack Parr program with Trudy Irwin, Jerry Fielding in the orchestra, yours truly, Hi Everback, and starring America's new young humorist, Jack Parr.
Thank you. This is Jack Parr. Hello, and a special message to fashionable women everywhere. Don't lower your skirts, ladies. Raise your knees. Well, let's look at the news this week. On Wednesday, Gabriel Heater predicted that Thursday would probably be followed by Friday. And sure enough, it all came true. I read in the paper where the third-party movement for Henry Wallace got started in Los Angeles last week. It started in Los Angeles a week ago, and already it spread like wildfire to the city limits. The newspapers are full of stories about the American Legion Convention in New York City. Legion boys arrived in town with their electric canes. Now the city's really jumping. Even the Empire State Building is seven floors higher. Some of the Legionnaires got out of hand this week and tipped over Brooklyn. This thing working? 1, 2, 3, 4. Testing. 1, 2. Jokes like that'll bring back silent radio, I think. There's also been a lot of news stories about the big conference in Brazil. A year ago, everyone was singing, South America, take it away. Today, President Truman is flying down to bring some of it back. As one who believes in the good neighbor policy, I have invited a visiting South American here to the studio today, Senor Hilando Averbach. Senor Averbach, you're a Latin, are you not?
Yes. I am from South America.
Oh, South America?
They got an awful lot of bourbon in Brazil.
That's very good.
That is a South American joke. I hear on South American radio program, Jose's Tavern. It's a very funny program. Man answers telephone and says, hello, Jose Stavern, Jose no here, Canteen Blas, the manager speaking, very funny, programo.
Touché, senor, touché.
Thank you, San Luis Obispo. Tell me, senor, have you known many people from South America?
Well, not many, but I've met Carmen Miranda.
Oh?
Yes, I knew it was Carmen Miranda because all her clothes were made that way.
Touché, senor.
San Luis Obispo. Dino, there's something else I'd like to ask you before you go out spreading goodwill. Tell me about the movies down in South America.
We show early American picture in South America, but we don't use the same titles. We change them. For example, do you know this new picture of Betty Grable's Mother Wore Tights?
Oh, yes, of course. But what do you call it down there?
Mother Wore a Sombrero. No tights!
Thank you. Thank you, amigo, and La Cienega Boulevard to you. I seem to have gained some fame, or maybe I should say notoriety, for being a worrier. I guess maybe I am, but I don't worry about myself. I worry about other people and things, which leads us to our whatever happened afterwards department. The question, whatever happened to that young man that Horace Greeley said to, go west, young man, go west? The answer, today that young man is the president of the Standard Oil Company of New Jersey. And to delve a bit further into our subject, whatever happened to Eloise Cartmell, once handmaiden to Queen Victoria? Is she still making hands? I know not, but I do know what happened afterwards to a very famous pair of lovers, John Alden and Priscilla. As you remember, John Alden married Priscilla after endeavoring to impress her with the qualities of his good friend, Miles Standish. And I know you all remember Priscilla's famous remark.
Miles Standish is a bum.
I forgot to mention that Priscilla came from Brooklyn, which in those days was known as Outer Mongolia. Priscilla and John Alden were very happy in those New England days. In spite of the housing shortage, they lived in Plymouth in the back seat. One evening in December in the year 1620...
Is that the dreamboat?
Yes, tis I, John Alden, Pilgrim Father. I repeat, Pilgrim Father. And how are you, Priscilla, my loving wife?
Peachy, I just had a Moscow mule.
Oh, it is good to be home, but it's kind of cold in here, Priscilla.
I hadn't noticed.
Better throw another witch on the fire. Well, that's better. It's a mighty cold night, and the snow is 10 feet deep outside.
Oh, my gosh. Here comes my cousin Hyman. He always wants to play games.
We'll just ignore him.
Anyone for tennis?
John, I thought we might go out tonight.
Well, that's all right with me. Have we got a babysitter? There he is now. Our babysitter, Standing Bull. I don't know about going out, Priscilla. There's a lot of unfriendly Indians about. The settlement may be attacked at any moment.
But, John, this is our wedding anniversary. It's our wooden wedding.
Well, I hadn't forgotten our wooden wedding, Priscilla. Here, I brought you something. A pair of snuggies.
Gee, Naughty Pine.
Yes, and look, Ginger.
Well, on the surface, everything looks pretty serene in the John Alden household, doesn't it? But, and it was, too, but...
Anyone for tennis?
But what happened afterwards? Did John Alden and Priscilla live happily forevermore? They did until John was called to Boston on business. And you know the old saying, when the cat's away, the mice will play. Tonight, they're bowling. But while John Alden was in Boston, guess who called on Priscilla? His best friend, Miles Standish. One Wednesday night, Miles called on her and tried to kiss her. He tried to kiss her again on Thursday night. And on Friday night. And then on Saturday night. Miles kissed Priscilla.
Oh, Miles.
Oh, Priscilla.
Oh, Miles.
Oh, Priscilla.
Oh, Miles.
How far is Reno?
Oh, miles. Why did you ever come back? I rejected you once. And John says you're nothing but a rough soldier. What do you say to that?
File me down, baby. File me down. Ah, Priscilla, come to my arms and let me crush you and hug you and kiss you. Oh.
Anyone for tennis?
Priscilla was infatuated with Miles Standish. She forgot all about her husband, John Alden. She forgot about her three children, Phil, Phyllis, and little Alice. She forgot about everything but the fact that she was a woman. I stole that line from an ad of a Warner Brothers picture. But retribution will out, and that day, while Miles Standish and Priscilla were in each other's arms, the little settlement was attacked by the savage natives.
For shooting Indians?
Well, that's about all there is to the story tonight.
Hey, just a minute. You kind of left us up in the air there. What happened afterwards? What happened to these people? Where are they now?
Well, I'm supposed to do the worrying here, but if you really must know, Priscilla lives across the alley from the Alamo. John Alden married the lady from 29 Palms, and Miles Standish is running a motel in North Hollywood. Now here's our lovely singer, Trudy Irwin. For the first 18 years of her life, Trudy Irwin was a girl. What better basic training could any woman ask for? Yes, Trudy is our vocalist, and now she's going to vocal for you. Trudy, what are you going to vocal?
I wonder, I wonder, I wonder.
All right, Trudy, Trudy, Trudy.
Somebody new. I wonder, I wonder. Can't help it if I wonder. No matter which side of the pillow that I'm sleeping on, my dreams of you continue through until the dawn. And after that I find the daydream crew comes on. I wonder, I wonder. Can't help it if I wonder. Care for someone else I see. Well, then, it's quite all right with me. I'm gonna get me dressed up in my Sunday suit and find myself somebody who is quite as cute. And when you realize that you and I are through, I wonder, I wonder, I wonder what you'll do. America, this is London calling and inviting you to spend a day with the BBC, the British Broadcasting Company. The correct time is August.
Before we begin today's broadcast program, here's a bit of a weather report. The entire British Isles will be shrouded in a blanket of fog, with a spot of sun shining only over Manchester. The weather people call it a fog with a bare midriff. Temperatures 86, humidity 78, Cambridge 6, Oxford 3. Now for our first program, Cheerio Chumley, your early morning exerciser.
Cheerio, everyone! This is Cheerio Chumley wishing all of my chums cheerio. It's a brick of a day, isn't it? Time for our exercises. Shall we ever go at it? Righto. Now, bend from the waist and raise your right leg. Bend again and lift your left leg. By this time, you chaps should have your trousers on. And you ladies should have your flimsies on, too. Now, perhaps we'd better get on with our wake-up exercise. Ready? One, two, three. Mother, don't make up my bed yet. I'm coming home to sleep.
The BBC presents Breakfast in Piccadilly, broadcast direct from Lord Frobisher Addingham's restaurant.
Good morning, ladies.
Good morning, Lord Frobisher Addingham.
Come now, ladies, let's not stand on ceremony. Let's use first names. Shall we try it again? Good morning, ladies.
Good morning, my lord, the Archbishop.
Righto. And a jolly well chippity-pippity-pip to you. Now, I'll stroll through the restaurant and interview some of you lovely ladies, try on a few hats, and perform all sorts of hilarious types of tommycock and poppy rock. What is your name, madam?
Mrs. Fleetwood Probby. I'm from Wessex on the Quetic.
I've been there in my Essex. And, what do you do, Mrs. Pretty?
The name's Proddy.
Soddy. What do you do for a living?
I'm a seamstress in a tea factory.
A seamstress in a tea factory?
I make the bags.
Fascinating. Aren't you working today?
No, we got the 6-week layoff. We're waiting for the new fashion decrees from Paris.
Oh, I say, I understand tea bags will be wearing longer strings this year.
That's right. We've had too many complaints from people with short arms and tall cups. They scald their fingers.
Thanks terribly, Mrs. Fleetwood Pruddy. And here's a box of our sponsor's product, Dasin, the soap that doesn't do anything. It's dandy for lazy housewives. Just sprinkle some in a tub of water and it goes right to the bottom, just lays there and gets gooey.
I say, isn't it about the hour you select the eldest lady present, Montmorency Ashforton?
Quite. I have a card informing me that one of the ladies present is 96 years old. If there's anyone older than that, will she please crawl up here?
I'm 97.
I'm 99.
I'm 101.
I'm 103.
I'm dead.
Come now, madam. How old are you?
I'm 104.
Oh, I say there. That's not cricket. This interview is supposed to be for ladies. You're a man.
Yes, I noticed that this morning when the laundry... Nasty-minded. My laundry came back.
Fascinating. I see here that you're married. When were you married?
Last Tuesday.
Well, better late than never.
I'm afraid it's going to be never. My parents want to annul the marriage.
I see. Your parents, are they alive?
No, but they send messages. If I had any blood, it is gone.
May I ask the name of your bride?
Certainly, sir. Lizzie Sheffield.
Oh, I say, isn't she the woman who's been married 8 times and killed all 8 of her husbands?
Good heavens, sir, no wife's perfect.
Fascinating, fascinating. Now, sir, as our eldest guest, allow me to present you with this orchid, which... But wait a minute. I note you're already carrying a flower.
Yes, it's a lily.
A lily?
When you're 104, you always got to be ready.
Fascinating, fascinating.
Here's a reminder, chaps, you're listening to BBC. Do be patient and bear with us through the following frightfully commercial announcement.
Gideon!
Yes?
Must speak with you.
Speak then.
I'm leaving you.
Someone else.
Naturally.
Leslie.
Precisely.
Oh, dash it all. You're the 12th wife to have left me. The next time it'll be bad luck.
Poor Gideon. He could avoid his troubles if he too wore one of the new Monarch monocles. Remember, Monarch is the only one to make the new all-weather monocle, the eyeglass with an awning. And two, there's the new opera-style monocle. This model has an open eye painted on the glass. If you want to sleep at the opera, place one in each lid and snooze through Puccini.
The Dr. I.O.U. program. Tonight, we are broadcasting from the stage of the RKO Kidney Pie Theater. It's our pleasure to present that mental chap with a monetary reward for your deucedly clever replies, Dr. I.O.U.
Thank you. My assistants are stationed in provocative positions about the theater. Henry Tichborne in the pit, Farthington Crovingale in the rotunda, Charles Billingsworth in the upper tier, and Philip Whiteside in the box office estimating the day's receipts. And now to Faversham Butterworth.
Doctor, I have a young lady in the balcony.
Dash it off, Butterworth. We've no time for that sort of thing, you know.
But, Doctor, she wishes to reply to an interrogation.
Fascinating. Madam, would you care to win a quid?
No, thank you. I have three. Oldest one's 14.
Then we'll make it half a crown. Tell me, what American motion picture star was born in South Africa?
I don't know. Frankly, I'm baffled.
That's correct. Baffled Rathbone. Give that lady half a crown and a box of kippers. You do like kippers, don't you?
Oh, yes. I have three. Oldest one's 14.
Fascinating. And now, ladies and gentlemen...
I say, we are forced to interrupt this program to bring you a message of the utmost importance from Scotland Yard. Attention all bobbies. Lady Crawford's fabulously valuable 20-foot string of rare pearls with a diamond clasp has been reported missing. That is all. We return you now to the Dr. I.O.U. program.
And now for our exciting jackpot question. The contestant who correctly answers this question will win a box of kippers, a pair of slippers, and a 20-foot string of rare pearls with a diamond clasp. Ladies and gentlemen, one of the most serious problems we face is the rising accident rate. Each year, more of us are killed or injured fighting the battle of the boulevards. Let's try to avoid accidents by not being careless drivers. Obey the law. Don't mix alcohol and gasoline. Traffic regulations are posted for your safety. Don't disregard them. And above all, don't speed. Remember, the accident doesn't always happen to the next fellow. Be careful. The life you save may be your own. Thank you.
Next week to the Jack Parr Show with Trudy Irwin, the Paige Cavanaugh Trio, Jerry Fielding in the orchestra, and yours truly, Hi Averback. Jack Parr is under contract to RKO Pictures, producers of The Bachelor and The Bobby Soxer, in which Jack Parr does not appear.
I'll be in something soon, Hi. RKO thinks of me as the new Cary Grant.
Well, then why worry, Jack? They'll put you in a picture if you're the new Cary Grant.
I know, Hi, but they're not through using the old Cary Grant yet. Good night, everybody.
The Jack Parr Show on 2 into 2 yesterday from the last day of August 1947 on NBC. And that wraps this hour of comedy on 2 into 2 yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from radio's past. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark Levanier. Thanks for tuning in.